Mysterious Universe, Season 34, Episode 13. Coming up on this show, we've got Remembering the Future, The Ladies Mirage Men, and Remote Viewing Time Loops. I'm your host, Benjamin Grundy. Joining me is Aaron Wright.
Can you just stop talking about the white lady?
What did I do?
You've ruined our systems this week. We keep on talking about this woman and the curse comes upon us.
Well, I don't think she's a woman, for starters.
Okay, some demonic entity.
And I don't mean that kind of not a woman. But no, okay. We've been having all these problems. So another issue has occurred. Our email server went down. So apologies to anyone who's in the last 24 hours tried to reset your email or tried
contact
to email
support
through our contact forms. It's all gone down and it's just happened to occur
when our developer, who would usually fix it instantaneously, is hiking in the wilds of New Zealand.
It's the lady, man. She's waiting. Because it's like we've had a solid system for 2 years,
yep,
or more, longer than that. Everything's been great. And normally we'd be able to fix this issue in 10 minutes because our developer would be able to we just need to make some changes and it'll all be back online. But I can't do it. Only he can do it. It's like the lady waits until he gets on that plane to go on his holiday and then crashes our email server.
So this keeps on happening and yet you've chosen for this plus extension to talk about her.
Well, you got to triple down. You can't give up. You can't be like, oh no, the lady's after me. She wants to destroy our business. Dude, you got to triple down.
She does. No, I'm not tripling down. Like, I'm not going to go all the way to completely apologizing. I'm just going to suggest that perhaps we should back off a bit.
It's just a low level, maybe very powerful demonic entity.
Oh, great.
In the guise of a lady.
Right. So we'll just mess with that.
What
That's
are we
fine.
Meant to do? Just roll over and take it?
No, we don't
just
take
get
it from
pegged
demons.
By the white lady. No, thank you. I'm not into that. I'm going to persevere. So, yeah, before we get into the show, I just have to let you know the contact forms in our site are down. They'll
so
be
feedback
down.
And support are not functioning properly at the moment.
No, they're
at
working.
All.
You just can't reach us through the contact.
That's what I'm saying. They're not working. Like, they can't
through
get to
the
us.
Through the contact form. So yeah. You can reach us. You've just got to email us directly, support@mysteriousuniverse.org. The other major thing is if you need to reset your password, if you're a Plus member, that's not working either because that relies on the email servers. So again, for that, you've got to email us directly.
support@mysteriousuniverse.org. I'll put the link in the show notes just in case. I'm the same. I sometimes forget these things. Yeah, support@mysteriousuniverse.org.
Yeah, at the latest, it'll all be fixed by Tuesday when our developer can get back and implement the changes.
Unless he falls off a mountain.
Unless he's probably got his leg wedged in between two mountain crops. And he's just screaming at the top of his lungs. He's probably sawing off his arm to get free right now.
I was thinking that, yes, that did cross my mind. So,
he's a fit guy, though. He'll be fine. He can type with one hand.
Well, he can code with one hand, hopefully.
So, yes, I will be talking, tripling down on the lady because there's a blog post I came across today. Well, it's actually a series from Tanner Boyle. It's over at, what is he called?
Getting Spooked, is that
the
one?
Getting Spooked. He's got a series. There's 9 parts to this. It's Christopher Bledsoe and the UFO Cult of Intelligence. This is a different angle from what we've been talking about on The Lady. We've been taking the angle that this is some kind of spiritual entity that has appeared to multiple people. It might be something ancient. We alluded to this on the last show that The Lady is more like Ishtar or some kind of ancient goddess.
The Mesopotamian strange, I don't want to say they're perceived as a goddess, but they're really demonic, aren't they?
Yeah, something that's sent to corrupt humankind on almost a cyclical timeline. But this is a different look because what Tanner Boyle does is he looks at the people that are surrounding Chris Bledsoe, and the UFO Cult of Intelligence is in reference to a book from, I believe it's the 1980s, called The CIA and the Cult of Intelligence by Victor Marchetti and John D. Marks. And it's really about this secret society. It portrays the CIA and other intelligence agencies as a sort of secret society that control vaster areas of power than the normal purview of intelligence agencies.
I believe that. I mean, the problem is with any intelligence agency, you see it in defense, you see it in foreign affairs departments, those sorts of things. Wherever there's secrets, right, it generates this kind of, I don't want to say community because it's not a community, but it generates this group feel of that you're the ones that are on the inside and everyone else is on the outside. And in doing so, it does create a cult-like feel. So I wouldn't be surprised if what they're describing in here is actually occurring and continues to occur.
They wrote, its membership extending far beyond governmental circles reaches into the power centers of industry, commerce, finance, and labor. The cult of intelligence is a secret fraternity of the American political aristocracy. So in terms of what's going on with Chris Bledsoe and his encounters with the lady and all this weird UFO stuff, Boyle is making the argument it's akin to this CIA fraternal cult of intelligence. It's something very similar. And there are all these interesting connections. So we're going to go into this guy, Taylor, this NASA employee. What are you looking at on the screen?
Oh, I was just reading where it says, published with blank spaces indicating the exact location and length of 168 deletions demanded by the CIA.
Yeah, so we're not going to be talking about this book. It's just it's just analogous to this.
Right.
So, yeah, we're going to be going back into it, but from a different angle, looking at the connections. There's a suggestion that for a long time, the people that have these strange paranormal experiences, like Chris Bledsoe and others who encounter UFOs and other high strangeness, their beliefs at a certain point are coerced, controlled, and reinforced by a shadowy group of individuals connected with intelligence agencies.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Like it makes sense that you would go from people in the know about things which are common, I suppose, to things that become occult.
Yeah.
Naturally would flow into that.
But they come in and kind of shape and mold the message of the experiencer to their own, you know, to their own means, to their own desires.
You mean it's kind of like, it's not MK Ultra, but it is kind of like some type of psyop. Is that what you're suggesting?
It's connected with that. It's very much connected with that. So what have you got coming up? Something else that'll curse us?
Probably not curse us. I came about this route actually in an odd way, but it led me down this path today into remote viewing, but not the typical remote viewing. And of course, remote viewing isn't typical in any sense. But when I say typical, I mean just the way that we talk about it. But a friend of mine has been on rather a spiritual journey over the last year or so. And she's a very dear friend of mine. And I've watched from a distance what she's been going through, right?
Crystals.
She's been with crystals. And of course, like she's
Lemurian jade.
There's a lot of stuff. So some of the stories I've been telling you about, like ghost pathways, like I was telling you the story about how there was allegedly some type of there was a woman living in Noosa and like she had all these ghosts marching through her house.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it was on a ley line that was from an abandoned hospital.
Yeah.
And so somehow the ghosts were heading through her house. So she was kind of hanging out with them. She was going to not prayer circles, but like vortice shutdown like parties where they would go together and they would try to descend. Like they'd have someone who was psychic or sensitive to sense things. And then they would go and try and put energy into it to shut down these portals of where this crazy stuff. And of course, she's not obviously completely involved in that, but she has been following along. I say she's a dear friend, but I've kind of been using her as a proxy to find out what's connected with this kind of stuff. You know, is there any content there? Is there any stories there?
Yeah. But give me your craziest experience.
Well, she's very wise, right? So in what took me probably the better part of almost two decades to understand that there's a lot of things in here that we shouldn't be messing with and you shouldn't be involved with, she's done so in about 18 months. She's okay. Very rapidly realized. So right now she's reading the Bible and she's just like, I've got to steer clear of this stuff. You know, things are not, you know, what it seems. It's always very low level. I don't want to use the word demonic, but it is like, it's possibly these sorts of things. But in doing so, to cut a long story short, once she stepped away from these circles, it's almost like the phenomena has followed her now because she texted me and she's like, have you ever heard of big cats on the Sunshine Coast? And I'm like, yeah, of course I have. You know, there's plenty of stories out there, particularly around Gympie. Now, Gympie is an area which is kind of still on the coast, but it's significantly more inland.
People seeing panthers and
for decades.
Abnormally large black cats.
I remember being a kid and here because I grew up in Brisbane and I remember hearing stories about people up this way, you know, seeing large black panthers. And when I mean large, like significantly large animals that look like the size of a Siberian tiger and being pursued by them. A lot of the stories relate fascinatingly enough to when people are driving along remote highways and remote, motorways up here late at night. And of course, they're driving along and they're kind of just like the stories you get from the UK. All of a sudden, something will step out into the road and it has no urgency about it. It has no concern about the oncoming vehicle and the vehicle has to swerve around it. And as they get close to it, they realize that That's a big black cat.
Like it wants to be seen.
Like it wants to be seen. And of course, people look in their rear vision mirror and, like the cliche, they just vanish, literally vanish before them. A lot of the time people say they will just vanish in a blink of an eye, and they kind of have to blink a couple of times and go, did I just see what I thought I saw? But there are reports, there have been anecdotal stories of people out near Kenilworth, for example, saying that they've encountered these things, and they said they disappear in a cloud of mist.
How does this tie to remote viewing?
So the way that this ties to remote viewing is that she texted me and she was like, and I responded to her and I was like telling her some of these stories. And she's like, oh, great, because I've got one on my property. And I was like, oh.
She's been seeing things. Has this started since she got involved with these esoteric groups out here?
Since she got involved with these esoteric groups. And she said that it started that she was in her house. I don't know exactly where she was, but she was near a window. And she heard this growl, like it was a growl that was unlike, and she knows the animals out there and she lives on a property. So I think her particular property sits on certain lines. Mm. I think that's possibly why this activity is taking place. It wasn't taking place previously because she hadn't been around these groups. And now she has been around these groups, even though she stepped away from them. The attention of the phenomenon, the intelligence behind it, has now basically latched onto her. And I mean, she can deal with it, so I'm not concerned about
Pretty
that.
Pretty soon she's going to have a yowie breathing on her window at night.
Well, that's what I wonder, right? But then I started to think about, you know, what she was describing. So she said at first it was just a growl and she went running outside because it was so different. She wanted to see what it was. And by the time she had gotten up and gone outside, there was nothing there. And she tried to tell her partner and he was like, you're crazy. And, you know, he thinks a lot of the stuff that she looks into is a bit not so. So he doesn't really, you know, get involved. But then she was saying, look, that was just a one-off thing. I saw her the following Sunday and she's like, I was outside and it was outside and it was purring. I could hear it purring. I said, what do you mean you could hear
it? What the hell?
And she's like, it's actually, and she went and she looked up.
How loud? Because a big cat would sound incredible.
Loud. Well, she looked up a panther purr. She actually looked it up on YouTube. See if you can find one. And straight away, she's like, that is the noise that it was making. And she's like, it was near me. It was around me, but I couldn't see it.
What? Well, I guess if it's at night and it's a black cat.
No, this was daytime.
Oh, okay.
This was daytime. So she says she gets this sense that it's kind of like not necessarily watching over her, but it doesn't have, and it doesn't bear any malice. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the actual video she sent me.
It's got so much bottom end.
Doesn't it? Because I'm like, do panthers purr? And immediately I started thinking about, so I looked up the work of, you know, Mike Williams. We had Mike on the show a very, very long time ago, but he wrote an amazing book on a lot of this activity out here in Australia. And some of the theories about, obviously, has taken place with these stories because these stories have been around since the 60s, maybe a little bit further back, is that, oh, it's mascots from when the Marines and the US Army, you know, were stationed here during the Second World War. They brought over panthers. I'm like, okay, cool. Oh, they did. There's evidence that they actually did do that, but there wouldn't have been enough to sustain this population. It doesn't seem to make sense. And also what my friend is describing, it fits more into the esoteric side of things that we hear with the research of Merrily Harpore and others, that it's like there is an esoteric, a spiritual element to encounters with these sorts of things.
And yet her partner hasn't seen anything or heard anything.
He hasn't seen anything. I think he may have heard the purr at one point, but I have to talk to her. I'm going to see her again this weekend. Maybe something is going on there, but look.
Do they have any chickens on their property? They do.
They've got chickens. They've got farm animals. They've got a pony. You know, they've got all those things. So she was concerned that maybe there was a big cat, you know, prowling on their property, but they haven't had any, you know, strange mutilations of their farm animals or anything like that. Although, interestingly enough, not too far north of Gympie, there is a farm where full-on cattle mutilations have been taking place about 2 or 3 years ago. So I don't think that that's connected, but I can understand why you'd be like, what the hell is this thing? Like, what's going on?
Maybe a portal has opened in the Gympie Pyramid.
But that's the thing, right? When you drive out in that direction, you see like these mountains that, I know they're mountains, right? So don't get me wrong, but they look like pyramids. They have this incredibly like four-sided pyramidal shape, which I know they're just volcanic plugs, but it's like, it's pretty uncanny that that particular area is connected with, of course, Rex Gilroy has done a great deal of research. And look, so he's a lovely guy, but I'm mentioning Rex Gilroy. Some of his stuff was certainly out there, but no more out there than, you know, some of the other research that has gone on. Of course, you remember there was the actual Gympie Pyramid, which was destroyed.
Taken down now?
I think most of it. I think it was turned into a housing development at one point. I'm not entirely sure.
yeah, that's hilarious. Housing development.
Like, how ridiculous is this? So as I was, like, going through, I was looking through Mike's book and I'm wondering, well, is there anything that's going on in this particular area? But she was insistent. She's like, no. It's like, it's there, but I can't see it. But I definitely heard it. It was present. Yeah, and that image you've just put on the screen here, Ben, it doesn't do it justice. There's two of them out there and they've got this really strange four-sided pyramidal shape about them. And, of course, the Rex Gilroy stuff is like, well, thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. There was an Egyptian connected group or influential group that had come to Australia. Look, it's a topic for
another
show.
Or some Italian guy that made it. I don't know why.
That was the other argument that some Italian guy had created it to grow wine or grow grapes upon. But yeah, I don't necessarily buy that because it's been there long before that.
Have you seen the Gympie ape?
No, what's the Gympie ape?
There he is.
Oh, that's cool.
It's like it's a rock.
It's a rock
that looks like an ape.
Yeah, and that's a lot of these things out there. Like it could be pareidolia, it could be, but there are these stories, and it's like it's from the locals. Like there's always those local rags as well, like the local newsletters and those sorts of things. There's plenty of stories in there of people claiming that they've encountered ape-like creatures in their backyards, those sorts of things. So there is a lot of history out there of strange activity. But thinking about my friend's,
but remote viewing,
right. So thinking about my friend's experience, I was like, what are you seeing here? Is this that you're, because the fact that she couldn't see it, but she could sense it, I thought, is she tapping into something? Is it because she has been hanging out with these groups that it somehow altered her perceptions, her abilities to sense something that's not usually within the purview?
Well, it sounds like she's been pursuing an occult path over the last 18 months.
Very much so. Yeah. Which she's stepped back from now. But it reminded me of like stories that were described by people like Nick Redfern and Jenny Randalls. Like during 1982, 1983, there was a wave of sightings across the UK of a pterodactyl, right? This was seen in the UK in an area known as the Pennines. And Jenny Randalls wrote a book on it called Supernatural Pennines. And it relates to this encounter, right, of where it was a location known as the Devil's Punch Bowl. So once again, you've got this weird demonic name that's connected to these sorts of areas. It was September the 12th, 1982. There was a man named William Green. He came forward with this astonishing story of what he encountered at Shipley Glen Woods. So this was apparently that he'd stepped out into the wilderness and he had seen this large grey-coloured creature that was flying haphazardly over him, obviously, and he said it possessed a large set of wings. They were leathery-looking wings. They weren't feathers. And this obviously rules out it being just a larger bird. Like this puts, Nick says, this particular creature into a pterodactyl category. 72 hours later, a woman named Jean Schofield had the misfortune of actually seeing this beast at the West Yorkshire town of Yeadon. She said that this thing was heading towards Leeds Airport, thinking that there might be a mid-air collision. Of course, nothing happened because what are people seeing? They're seeing what appears to be a supernatural entity. You then had Jill O'Brien in a more recent report. So we know this story, but I want to mention this, right? Because it reminded me of what I mentioned before, of people seeing these black cats disappearing into a cloud of mist. In September of 2008, Jill was in the wilds of Alaska, and she was struck with awe because she claims that she heard a rustling in the bush. She looks over, a mini mammoth raced past her and just vanished. She's following this thing and it was gone.
Is it a juvenile mammoth or a full-grown mini mammoth?
All she said was that it was a mini mammoth. So I'm going to go with it being a gigantic mammoth shrunk down to mini size.
This is because in the past the Earth was smaller, so everything was smaller.
No, but we've got fossil records that show that that's not the case at all.
Only joking.
She said, Nick says, when I asked Jill to explain what she meant, she said, no, okay, it was a baby animal. It suddenly was enveloped by a small black cloud which sucked into itself and then it disappeared. The entire encounter lasted barely a handful of seconds at most. So I thought, this is intriguing, right? You've got this history of these sorts of things occurring around the world. Another really great example comes from Jenny Burrows. So this was 2009, so a year after the incident in Alaska. And Jenny had been walking with her dog. It was a Labrador. The Labrador's name was Bobby. Apparently, they were just enjoying the day when all of a sudden, the dog stopped and dropped to the ground. It was shaking. And she thought that maybe the dog was having a seizure. She didn't know why, because the dog hasn't had a seizure before, but the way that it was behaving, like she leans down to go and check on the dog. And she said she noticed that this dog was staring intensely to its left. And she kind of follows the gaze of this dog. And as she does so, she says she's horrified to see in the undergrowth what looked like a large cat. She said it was a mountain lion, but much, much bigger. She said this creature was certainly not a mountain lion because there was something that filled her with dread. She said there was like some stratospheric proportions of fear that were filling up her body because she noticed that this creature had two huge teeth that, of course, are the hallmarks of the saber-toothed tiger.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections oder Excel-Superkräfte?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Ich fühle mich plötzlich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Abgabefrist 31. Juli.
Was?
Schaffst du ganz entspannt mit Wieso-Steuer?
Ach, ja.
She's seeing allegedly an extinct animal, a saber-toothed
full
tiger.
Full size or mini?
Full size, not mini. Okay. No, full size. So
if it's mini, you don't have to worry about
it. Well, if it's mini, oh, it's so cute. Who cares? It's got big teeth. Apparently, as this saber-toothed monster loomed into full view and out of the confines of the bushes and the undergrowth, she could see that its body actually seemed to be semi-transparent and that his bottom front paws were either missing or were invisible. It looked at me with a sort of surprise when he saw me watching it, and then like that, it was just gone in the blink of an eye. So these sorts of stories are out there. Now, the question is, though, are people looking at real creatures from the past? Is that what's occurring here? When they're encountering these things, when they're sensing these things, is it that people are having some sort of a time slip? Like they're either the entity is coming through time from the past into the future, they're traveling from the future into the past. It's difficult to say. Are they encountering flesh and blood creatures? Is it part of some type of breeding population that has been in that area? I highly doubt that.
Well, in the stories where people claim they've had some time slip into the past, one of the first things they notice is that the atmosphere in the sky is different. And sometimes the foliage is different as well. You know, they notice the plants have changed or just the countryside looks different.
Correct. Well, the theory is here, and I was thinking about it, and it just so happened that it coincided with me going through this great reboot of a video, an interview with Laurie Williams. So this was put out by New Thinking in Lab with the wonderful Jeffrey Mishlove. Yeah, really, really amazing researcher. And he was speaking with Laurie Williams, who is a trained remote viewer. Mm. I'll link to her book in the show notes as well, where she provides like instructions on how to do remote viewing. And she trained under Lynn Buchanan, of course, who was, you know, a famed remote viewer in this field, been connected with government agencies, has been doing work for the government long before, you know, it had broken itself into the mainstream. It was something that was being used by governments, obviously, for military purposes, intelligence collection purposes. But she starts talking in this about time, like viewing time. And I'm thinking,
she's got a book out.
Yeah. Is it possible? Yeah, this is the one I'll link to, Boundless, your how-to guide to practical remote viewing. And she focuses on controlled remote viewing, which is very important because it's about, and we'll go into it in a moment because I want to play some audio from this particular interview of where, when you're remote viewing, how do you know that what you're seeing is real and is not a creation of your mind? And where it comes down is two things. One is that it has to be a blind target. So you're just given a set of coordinates. So you're told to focus on a particular one of the regularly used things is like an image is put into an envelope and the envelope is sealed and you're told to look at not just the image, to go to the location of that image, which will come up. But it made me think about it because she was talking about the concept of time. And I was thinking, is it just possible that my friend and like these other people that are encountering pterodactyls and are encountering saber-toothed tigers and weird mini mammoths and those baby mammoths, I should say, they're not necessarily time traveling. They're not necessarily going through a time slip. You know, they're not falling into some, you know, eddy in another dimension that, you know, is causing these effects to take place. But rather, they're using their innate remote viewing abilities to perceive through time. It's like these things are occurring. Like they may have been in these particular locations, whether it's in the future or the past, it doesn't matter. And they're seeing through time. And many of the stories that was described by Laurie here, which I'll play for you, makes me think that maybe that's more likely.
Mm.
Maybe many of these sorts of stories that we talk about of people seeing things, not necessarily so when people see cryptids and more obscure animals, I think things that are like a Bigfoot creature perhaps. I mean, maybe people are going through remote viewing, seeing Australopithecus or something like that. I don't necessarily think that that is like this idea answers everything.
Sure.
But it might give us some insight that we naturally all, and this is why these people teach remote viewing. It's something that we're all capable of. It just has to be trained. But for some people, I wonder if it's just spontaneous. And is it simply because of what they're doing? When you start looking at the phenomenon, it kind of changes your perception so you can see these things. But because it's not in a controlled environment, you start having these weird encounters. So what I want to play for you right now is how we set this up. And Laurie Williams is describing this great scene of how she was working with this other remote viewer. And it was part of her training program. And she basically produces a photograph of which the remote viewer, the subject, can't see, again, placed inside the envelope. But she asks her to not just tell me what's in the photograph, but go into the photograph. And in this sense, remote viewing actually provides people with the ability to time travel. They actually, their consciousness may time travel. Take a listen.
With time traveling to the past has occurred, and we find that remote viewers, especially when they're doing practice targets, let's say that I am giving you a target that is a photograph from National Geographic that I've pasted onto paper and stuck in an envelope for you. So that photo, if it was taken in 1965, effectively you are viewing the past.
Mm-hmm.
I had a student who was taking a one-on-one remote viewing class with me. And on the third day of class, her target was a photograph of a young Jane Goodall. And for those who don't know who Jane Goodall is, Jane Goodall worked with primates and especially chimpanzees and apes. And Jane was squatting, a very young, slender Jane with brown hair about shoulder length, wearing shorts and a shirt. And she was in front of a tent that was, it wasn't really a full tent. It was more like a roof with on poles. And inside was picnic table with equipment on it. And Jane was kneeling in front of this chimpanzee, and she was holding the chimpanzee's finger with one hand and offering the chimpanzee something to eat with the other hand. So this remote viewer on her third day of class is describing Jane Goodall perfectly, her hair color, the length of her hair, what she's wearing. And then she says that she's holding something black and rubbery and cylindrical, which was the finger, and she's offering something to eat. And then she says, and there's a house behind her. And I said, well, move to that which you perceive as a house and describe it to me. So then she's in the tent and she says, oh, it's odd. The house has no walls. Then she said, and I'm looking at a pattern. I think it might be linoleum. And she starts drawing the pattern she sees on what she perceives to be linoleum. So once we finish the session and she's all done and I'm showing her the photograph, I'm thinking she's going to be so happy that she did so well in describing Jane and the monkey. Instead, she says, oh my gosh, I drew the pattern that's on the tablecloth on those picnic tables. And I said, well, you did. You drew it exactly. She had the pattern on the tablecloth on the picnic tables, she had drawn to perfection. And then she says, I was in that tent. I was actually in the tent looking at that pattern. And I said, well, I don't want to freak you out, but you were not only in the tent looking at the pattern, but you were in the tent 50 years ago.
Yeah, that's cool.
Isn't that incredible, the power of remote viewing? Because, and even in that image there, so I don't know if that's the exact image, because she was saying that both hands were being presented to the apes. I'm not entirely sure, but you can see in the very background of the image that was on the screen, and I'll link to it in the show notes so you can see it. In the very back corner of the screen, you can see a lino-like pattern on a tablecloth that was placed over the back of the table.
Let me just bring it up again. I'll mute the audio. Okay.
So if you look into the very back right-hand... Well, no, it's in the back right-hand corner or the middle of back right. You see there's a table there?
Yeah.
So if you look into the very back corner behind whatever that appears to be, that stick there, that's the pattern. And it's like a flowery pattern. Not something that's easy to be able to decipher.
I see, yeah.
Right? But she, in her remote viewing ability, didn't look at the photograph. She remote viewed into that event and was standing over that table looking at that pattern. And she was able to time travel in that. And so I thought, okay, this sets the scene for the ability of what remote viewing is. Remote viewing does potentially allow your consciousness to move through time. And there was a great story I was actually reading of where there was a couple that had a weird time slip encounter. And it's just the typical kind of encounter where things take place. But the wife came out of the encounter well before the husband did. So the husband claimed that he was looking at these houses that had suddenly materialized, but they'd both seen these houses materialized. It wasn't Ruffham House, which you only recently did an episode on, Ben, but it does fall into this history of these weird appearing and disappearing houses, right? And much like these anomalous animals, they will disappear in the blink of an eye, or sometimes they'll be enveloped by a mist of some kind, then will just disappear. When the wife came out of it earlier, she said she looked over at her husband and her husband was just there with his mouth wide open, a little bit of drool coming down, and his eyes were glazed over. She's like, he was still in this space.
What the hell?
But he was like not there. His consciousness or something wasn't there. And I thought, is that what's occurring here? Because what happens to you when you go through a time slip? Because to them, he thought they were having a conversation and they were excited and they were saying, this is amazing. Look at what we're seeing here. And how did this house suddenly appear? And what's going to him? Nothing had changed. Like, obviously the scene had changed, but he was just talking normally to his, and his wife's like, what the hell are you talking about? The house was gone. Like the house blinked away. I looked at you and you were in a trance. I'm like, he wasn't trapped in a time slip. Yeah, he was remote viewing.
It's not enough time has passed for him to even notice.
Correct. Yeah.
So how often have you and I just been like, oh.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I don't think I've ever had a time slip, so I don't know. But Laurie then says, well, look, this actually falls on a history of this kind of stuff happening with her research and her experiences, because she too had a time slip experience early on when she was tasked by Lynn Buchanan to remote view a particularly important area in the United States. Just play number two for me, please, Ben.
I had given me a target, and he was kind of, he's told me later, he said, I kind of wondered about giving you this target because I was afraid maybe it would be boring for you. And what it was it was a photograph of Bandelier National Monument in here in New Mexico that was the home of the ancient Anasazi Indians, and they lived in cliff dwellings there. Mm-hmm. And the photograph was just a park ranger leading a group of tourists by a rock wall. And that's all the photograph was. So we train our students not to go to the photograph in the envelope, but to actually go to the site mentally. So I was viewing it. I described the rock wall and the park ranger and the tourists, but I was worried about quitting too soon. Even though I didn't know what I was viewing, I thought, well, I don't want to quit too soon, because if I rescue myself prematurely, then I'm going to be missing something good at this target. So I kept viewing. And the next thing I saw were these practically naked brown people with pitch black hair, straight black hair, cooking over fires and building structures. And there were all these concepts coming in about famine and drought and persecution and things. And I realized that they had had to move. Well, when I saw what the photograph was, which was pretty much Bandelier National Monument in present day, and then realized that I had slipped through time when I continued viewing, and was actually viewing the Anasazi. Mm. I was so excited. I called Lynn and just, oh my gosh, I time traveled. And he laughed and said, I wondered if I should even give you that target because I thought it was too boring.
Now, what she's describing in this experience actually has some profound importance, because if you heard what she was saying there, she was simply looking at, like, she was looking at the photo in a remote viewing state, but she went further. She went deeper into that coordinate to be able to see through time. Now, while she doesn't describe this, it reminded me of a story that I read years ago. I couldn't find it. I looked, but I remember off the top of my head because it was profound, of a remote viewer who had been doing this for a long time. Now, if you recall, and this has been the basis of some of the things I've said in the past, like time. When we talk about time, time is a river, right? So time flows as a river, but a river is just a river, right? Of course, it has a start and a finish. But the reality is that it's a whole entity. And if you drop in the water at any point, you can go anywhere. And when significant events take place, it's like dropping a boulder into the water. And what happens with the water where that boulder is? Well, the water ripples out in every direction. So it goes into the future and it goes into the past. So this might be why some people have precognition. They pick up on those ripples that are coming through from the events of the future. This is something that occurs in remote viewing. But this particular story I read related to a remote viewer who said they could, when they remote viewed, and they'd been doing it for a long period of time, they got to a point that when they remote viewed, they saw the river of time, like the actual river of time. And it was this kind of, it was clear, but it was a flowing body of water. And it, while it was huge at the same time, they could kind of zoom in upon it, and they were on, and they were at like specific, it's almost like when you edit audio, for example, like you've got this big blue bar that you can zoom right down into it.
Yeah, you hear this from out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences as well. And the description of it is always different depending on the person.
Yes.
The idea is the same, that there's basically a layer where everything and every event is recorded. It's a memory, an infinite memory of everything that's ever happened everywhere, anywhere in the cosmos.
Yep.
And it's this layer of existence.
Yeah.
Well, my question is, and this might be semantics, but when she was remote viewing, she's remote viewing coordinates, but is the coordinate a photograph?
Yes.
Right. So one of the ideas is that the photograph contains that layer of information, or it's the photograph that connects to that layer of information.
Absolutely.
They're not necessarily traveling back in time, but they're using that object to tap into that layer we just described.
You're right. Yeah, exactly. And that is a possibility. I think it's more likely that because later on we'll get into it, but she calls them temporal attractors. And these are essentially, and they can, like, we have large temporal attractors, right? So 9/11, Pearl Harbor, those sorts of events, the death of Princess Di, you know, these sorts of events that just kind of radiate out across the entire Earth and for the most part, you know, generate this emotion for people. They're the really big ones, but you can have your own personal kind of ones as well. And it, you know, but basically those temporal attractors, when you're remote viewing and you're looking at that river, for whatever reason, you hone in on that, like you immediately zoom down into that particular event. Mm. And that will become apparent in some audio I'll play for you in a moment. But going back to this particular story of this remote viewer who said they would look at time, they said they noticed that there would be these shining pebbles. There would be these like crystalline shimmering, like with that effect, that iridescent effect, that were lying in the river. And what they would do is they would remote view down and they would pull up these pebbles. And when they pulled the pebble out,
is there a little video on it or something?
They would be plunged into the pebble.
Oh,
and when
cool.
they were plunged into the pebble, they would find themselves in this particular space. And what was really cool about it is I'm thinking, well, this is going to be these major events, like these major temporal attractors. No, it was like when you are, it ties in a little bit with clairvoyance, because when you are holding, like, for example, an object, they would remote view the object like psychometry, and they would dive into that and they would see the history of the like important events around that. So if, for example, there had been a domestic argument with this teapot that they were holding, that was recorded in the teapot. Mm. And then when they dropped into like seeing this menu essentially, but it was somehow, what would be the word? Not personified, but it would be materialized as these pebbles. So, and it was just dropped into
That's
this river.
Cool.
It's so, and there was hundreds of them, but the ones that were important, like thousands, the ones that were important would shine and you'd be able to pick them up. And I thought that's a really cool way of describing how some of these people utilize these abilities and tap into this kind of stuff.
It's similar to what we've heard described about people with synesthesia, who view time as a literal thing that's laid out
yes.
in front of you. Like, I remember one example was a historian. When he thinks about time, he literally sees a map.
Yes.
Like yep. with these events placed out, and he sees it like rolled out in front of him. And if he thinks of a particular time period, the map kind of zooms forward and then he can see these events as real physical yep. structures.
I really like it because this gets picked up in popular culture, but there are people that are remote viewers, clairvoyants, you know, people that are in these fields that say that time itself has like a personality. Time itself has a personality.
Is it conscious? Is it sentient?
It's like it's sentient. And if you piss it off, it's like it gets angry.
Don't
like
piss off Kronos. White Lady.
Yeah, exactly. If you provoke it, if you prod it, if you mess with it.
Yeah.
And this was kind of epitomized in, what was it? Was it 11/22/63? Was it James Franco that did the JFK television show?
Yes. And he also did the movie about cutting his arm off being wedged in the mountainside.
Well, that's a secret, isn't he? There, right there for you. But yeah, like he was essentially messing with time, and time was pushing back. And I'm like, well, yeah, I know that this is just simply a television show, a fictionalized show, clearly. But this is something that remote viewers and people that have dealt with this have said, no, time has moods. Like, and
It's a very panpsychic view of the cosmos.
Very panpsychic.
Everything is controlled by an intelligence.
Yep.
There's an intelligence responsible for every, I guess, mechanism in the universe.
Everything that humanity interacts with, there is some type of panpsychic instinct behind it. But let's go back to some of Laurie's stuff. So she was talking also about Lynn, right? And this is one of these major things about remote viewing is difficult for, it's okay really for viewing the past because you kind of can confirm things reasonably easy. But when you're remote viewing the future, you often will get results that seem so real, pardon me, and so accurate, but they're shut down. And the people there. So Lynn Buchanan was working with the military and he was asked to view into the next week to get the news headlines. And he saw something which apparently didn't take place until many years later.
Viewing the past can be provable. You know, the past has happened, so you can view something in the past and have proof to back it up. Whereas viewing the future, the thing that seems to be the biggest foil to viewing the future is that when remote viewers view the future, they could say, for example, I believe it was 1988 or 1985, Lynn Buchanan was assigned in the military to view a future event. What will be the biggest headline in next week's newspaper, for example? And he viewed the planes crashing into the Twin Towers on September 11th. So, of course, back then, that hadn't happened, and it didn't happen that following week. So they said, well, sorry, Lynn, you missed the target. He drew the Twin Towers. He drew the planes crashing into them. And then there was no proof that it was going to happen. But the problem is time is really a man-made construct, if you think about it. It's very fluid. Time is very fluid. And we don't even really think that it's linear. Now we think that time is happening all at once, which would account for Ed May's hypothesis that everything is precognitive, because if time is all happening at once, even viewing the past could be viewing the future.
Which is a bit of a...
What?
It makes it really difficult. And she even says that later on. She's like, I'm sure there's plenty of people listening that are going to be like, what the hell are you talking about? But it really does, in a very reductive fashion, if you break it down, it's like time always exists. We view it from this simple, moment. That's how we live it in this linear fashion where it goes from the past to the future. Exactly. But all these events, if you think these events have always taken place, it's always happened in the past. The future will always happen. It's always there. It's just our perception of it. Our perception of that river is at that very moment of where we are across it. But for people that can perceive this, they can say, well, no, time actually exists all the time. So that's why you can have people that have these perceptions and abilities to be able to see the future and be able to see the past.
So in other words, the river is already written.
In a way.
To a degree.
So that
you can't change major details.
So thinking about that, right? Let me just bring this up.
You can probably move a few pebbles around, but that time river is already set.
Exactly. But you got to remember, rivers can meander and rivers can change their course. So maybe that's what's going on. And maybe rivers can also actually be dammed and can be moved. So are there people that have these abilities that are trying to do so for their own?
Are you talking about some kind of space beaver in another dimension?
Maybe a temporal beaver, perhaps, that's doing that. So let me tell you this story, right? So we've got this story. I got this from a book called Future Memory. This is by PMH Atwater. And she was describing a collection of experiences of people literally remembering the future. And some things were rather... mundane things, but other were large events as well.
Yeah, I did this one back in 2015.
Right. There was this really great case. I'm not sure if you mentioned this one, Ben, but this really goes to highlight what you were just saying, that, these events are, it can't be changed. Things are supposed to happen. But this was caused by a drug-induced vision. So Kathleen 40, she's from Virginia Beach. She goes to the dentist. She had to have some root canals or something done. So they'd given her laughing gas. Everything was fine, but she was totally unprepared for this unusual experience she was about to have. She says, as the dentist was working, I felt in my mind's eye an intense energy pattern that was swirling inside my head, but it was moving synchronistically with the actions of the drill. I suddenly knew what the dentist's next words to me were going to be, how many times that he would... say what he was going to say, what he was going to do. She knew what the assistant was going to do. She tapped into essentially what was going on, but not what was going on in the moment, but in all time. She said, a deep sense of knowing came over me, a sense of knowing that this reality in all essence is just actors acting out our pre-assigned roles. This is a play. It's a long-running and continuous story full of performances. We are destined to repeat the same sequences in our lives over and over and over again without knowing it. And I thought, this reminds me of what Anthony Peake described with the idea of the Groundhog Day life, of where we play out the same life over and over and over again. God. And he was suggesting, oh, I know, God, why did I choose 2 decades of podcasting? The idea is that you're able to, this is why you have deja vu. There's also a concept called jamais vu, which I'll go back to in a moment, which is like you get really freaked out because you go to a familiar place, but the place is no longer familiar. I'll describe that in a moment.
I'm going to use that on the weekend. Are you experiencing jamais vu right now? I just had a weird case of jamais vu.
Well, I'll tell you that one before I go back to the
look at you, it's like really you're short. Retarded.
There was a woman, an example of jamais vu, and I think that was mentioned in Future Memory, or maybe I pulled it from somewhere else, but it was only a short story of a woman who was having some medical treatment done, and she needed to go for a series of scans or tests. Mm. And so she had to do this over 3 days. So for 3 days, she went into the same hospital that she had worked in, that she knew. She went up to the same level every time. She went to the same reception desk to check in. And, you know, she did this 3 days in a row. And on the fourth day, she went back to get her results and brought her husband with her. And she walks into the hospital and everything's different. And she's like,
What do you mean everything?
Like everything. Like the construction, the way that it was painted, the configuration of the inside. It was completely, like, totally and utterly different. Like, still the same hospital on the outside, still the same location, but it's all different. And she's like, what the hell is this?
She's on the wrong floor?
No, exactly. But no, she's just on the ground, but she's wandering about and she clearly looks like she's lost, to the point where a doctor walking past says to her, oh, you know, can I help you? Do you need to go somewhere? She's like, oh, yeah, I need to go up to, you know, this cancer clinic on the third floor or something, but it's not there. And he's like, oh, they must have given you, because he knows nothing about it, right? He knows where the cancer clinic is. He's like, oh, they must have given you the wrong information because that place closed down 3 years ago. And she's like, what? And she did. She gets instructions to go to the new place. She goes to the new place. The same receptionist she's seen for 3 days. The receptionist remembers her. And she's like,
what, remembers her from
years ago?
Yeah,
from checking in. No, from checking in. Like every 3 days prior, she'd checked in. And she's like, no, I've always been here. So this is jamais vu. It's like, it's a familiar place which suddenly becomes unfamiliar. So it's like, did she have a stroke? Did her memory completely change? That doesn't seem to be the case. Like, what the hell is happening here? So I thought that was a
jamais
vu. It's a really
weird. How do you spell it?
Yeah, it's like J-A, like deja. It's like, I don't know.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Like the same, but it's J-A, you know, vu. But coming back to the dentist story, right? So after all this is going on, like, yes, I know that this is drug-induced, but she kind of had this moment of where she knew everything that was going to happen. She realized that we're playing at our lives over and over again. So she went, you know what? I'm going to change this. So she screamed out the most, probably the most offensive and shocking thing that she could, right? Mm. She said, I had to change it. I had to change this path that I was on. So she did. And she said she was really embarrassed because she realized right after she said it that deviation from the story of the plot line was part of the plot line in her experience.
Is there a French word for that?
No, there's no experience for it. But she's like, I don't know. It's like the gas wore off. But she said after this, though, she had lingering after effects. She said her hearing increased where she could hear the thoughts of people around her, but they were being verbalized, which is a really strange kind of effect. She said it took a few days for everything to get back to normal. But she said she found the entire experience obviously very unnerving and somewhat depressing. She said here was this very real vision about predestination, about I don't have any control over my life. And really what I think she's describing here is that she's in that river, right? She's somehow in that river of time. There's another example here as well, which is rather, it's really horrible, right? And I don't know if it's the same Kathleen. It was in the same part of the book, so it must be. But perhaps she is a person who is inclined to be able to see these things anyway. It wasn't just the gas that caused this, because she said when she was 18, she was attacked by a stranger with a knife to her throat and she was sexually assaulted. It was horrible. She said, obviously it's horrible. The hysteria was swelling up inside her, but she thought, and she was thinking about her parents. She thought she was going to die. And she said, as this was happening though, her mind just suddenly sharpened and snapped into this crystal clarity. and she floated out of her body, and she said everything seemed to dissolve. And she was looking, and she was looking at herself as an older woman telling stories to children gathered around her while she sat in this antique black lacquered rocking chair, right?
What? Is this a past life or something?
Well, she's not sure. As all of this stuff is going on, she said that the rocking chair was exquisite. It was in this oriental design. There were paintings on the wall that she recognized. And finally, the terrible event ended, and she went to the police, and the police were like, "We know who this guy is. You're very lucky to be alive, because if you had fought back, he would have killed you." Ugh. Because that's what he's done with every other one that's fought back. He kills them. So she said that, you know, she 5 years later, you know, she got over this to as much as anyone can get over something like that. And she moved on with her life, and she met this lovely man. She married him, and she moves into this house that he already owned. And she walks in, and sitting there in the corner of this house is this antique black lacquered rocking chair that was exquisitely carved.
Wow. Is it the same room as well?
It's the same room. She looks around. She can see the tapestries and the paintings on the wall, everything she saw in this event. She's like, well, what was with the children? Well, it just so happens that afterwards, after all of the stuff that took place in her life and this memory, she started writing children's books.
Oh, wow.
That's what her story, like, that's what she ended up doing later in her life. So somehow this highly traumatic and awful event kicked her out of her body, but allowed her to see the river.
It's like the story I covered a couple of years ago of the guy in England who moved into a new house, got his favorite car, and then he was going through his old drawings he had done as a 4-year-old or 5-year-old, because his mother had kept them. And he finds this little crayon drawing he had done, and it's exactly the same drawing as his new house he's just bought. It's got his new car he just bought in the driveway. It's got the same flowers and picket fence in the little crayon drawing.
Yep.
It's like his 5-year-old self had drawn this vision of his future.
Yeah.
Perfection.
Yeah, he has somehow looked into that, whether it's the idea going back to Groundhog Day life, maybe. I think it's more likely that this is an ability that human beings innately have, that we can remote view, we can see. And because there's so many anecdotal reports of this kind of stuff as well, and they happen daily, but they become so frequent for some people that it almost becomes mundane. Because how many times, though, have you experienced, it's not necessarily deja vu, but I get it where I go, oh, I've seen this space. It's a space I've never been in, but it feels like I've seen it in a dream. Like I'm like, oh, I actually have. Like I recall having this dream of being in this space. Like I knew that I was going to be here. Do you get those experiences?
No, I was actually just, while you were telling me that, I was thinking about an argument I had with our web developer. But it was specifically on this issue, because he always likes to badger me with his philosophical, you know, meanderings. And we go back and forth while he's trying to fix stuff for us. And one of the things he mentioned last week was, you know, we were talking about fate, and he always gets annoyed when I bring this up. I always talk about fate and how you have this certain destiny in your life and you can change some small things, but ultimately what we become in this world is in a way preset. And he gets really annoyed when I say this. He calls me like environmental determinist idiot or something like that. But I don't like the idea either. Like, I don't think it's a really thrilling idea that we have this destined path in our life, and no matter what we do, we're going to meet it. But it seems as though that's what plays out in these kinds of experiences. Whether we like it or not, we have a destiny. We have a path that has been set for us in this life. So then you've got to question, well, what can we change? Well, in the end, it's like not much. What you can really change is how you react to your destiny, how you treat your destiny, whether you actually walk your path upright in your destiny.
When you think about it, if each life, and this is kind of a gamified way of thinking it, but each life is a level, and you've got to do certain things to get through that level. And if you don't do it, then you've got to keep repeating the level over and over again. And that's why
that idea, more than the idea of destiny.
But that ties
the groundhog idea sucks.
But that's what it ties. But once you get over that, but think about it, that level has predetermined things that take place that you cannot change.
I'll tell you why I don't like the groundhog idea. Because it relies on it means that you're the center of the universe. And I don't think that's true. It means that everything else has to revolve around you.
Two things can be correct at the same time, though. Like, it can be your part in the larger game, that's going on. I don't see how it's like, it doesn't have to be just focused on you.
So does that mean that everyone in my life, if I'm rerunning this life, does that mean everyone in my life is a simulation? Like, are you a simulation to me right now because I'm redoing this life again?
Not at all. I think we're all, it's like for me personally, it comes down to this belief of soul groups. I think we all travel as part of soul groups and we interact with people that we create karma with, you know, and that's why you'll have, it's like I've lost all of my family. Like I've obviously got a new family now, but like I went through really terrible things and I've been quite bitter about it in times. I'm like, why did I have so much loss? Why has it happened? I'm like, it had to work out that way. It had to go that way because that was, I feel now like it was all predestined.
Yeah, but isn't the definition of that groundhog idea that if you make a mistake, you come back and you live that life again?
Yeah, well, it is, right? Because if
so that you understand what I'm saying,
I see what
though,
you're saying.
That means
that
if that's true for you, I'm also in your repeat. Well, I'm in your loop.
But where I was going with that is that it might come down to it's not just karma for you. It's actually karma for that entire group, right? As a group.
So if you screw up, I got to come back and do this show again?
Probably. Maybe because you and I participated in bashing the white lady for so long. Dude, it's like, we're stuck with it.
Talk about generating karma.
See what I mean? So it's like a group thing. It's actually
no,
not-
I don't. This is why I don't think it's a legitimate idea. I think it's because it just relies on you being the center of the universe. And it's almost like the simulation idea that you're just booting up this version of your world.
Well, I was saying it's gamified, but I think through each and every existence, there's things that you have to overcome. There's things that will be thrown at you. And perhaps each life, I mean, I'm saying like, let's remove the Groundhog Day thing, right? But each and every life, those same predetermined events take place.
Oh yeah, I'm fine with that in terms of like
because you have,
organizing because, your karmic destiny.
Well, what I'm saying, like on the previous level, you didn't learn those lessons.
Yeah, sure. I'm not disputing that.
So the next one, going back to your predeterminism, is that, well, you'll keep on being faced with issues with your family or, you know, let's say you've got a gambling problem or alcohol, you'll keep on facing these things until you overcome it before you can go to the next level.
It's not a problem. I'm working on it. Well, I'm up. Actually,
I'm not seeing much work.
I'm up seven figures, dude.
On what?
I bet on frogs jumping out of a, you know, they get the hoop and they let the frogs go and they got to jump out. I'm up seven figures.
Are you nuts? Like, are we talking about what's a Vietnamese dong? Is that what seven figures is for you?
Jelly beans.
Yeah, exactly. So, but let's get back to this whole idea, though, of like remote viewing, allowing you to see this river of time, the gamified level, whatever you want to call it, whatever sense that you want to see it. There is people that can perceive these things. And I think Laurie, right, she has this other kind of element about her where I was saying that it's something that can be taught, but there also has to be an element in it that comes through from perhaps a predisposition to it. And she describes this experience that her grandmother had, which is quite a typical type of experience, but important nonetheless.
And there have been documented cases of amazing time slips. My ex-mother-in-law told me that when she was a little girl, she's a Hawaiian woman. Her name was Kapika Uwahinui. And she was living in the Hawaiian homestead in her house. And she was a little girl and she ran to go into the bedroom. And when she opened the door, the room was completely different. And there was an old bed with an old man in the bed, and there was an old woman in a chair next to the bed, reading to him. And of course, she was scared to death. She went running out of the room and grabbed her mother and said, "Something just happened. I went into the bedroom and, you know, I saw this old man and this old lady." And so her mother walked to the bedroom and opened the door, and everything was normal. And she said, "I promise, Mommy, that was what I saw." And then her mother went and got an old photo album. And she started showing her pictures in the photo album, and then she saw the old man and the old lady, and they were her grandparents or something.
So that's intriguing. So her grandmother is having these abilities or these visions that were linked to these abilities, obviously, to see through time. And she's seeing her grandmother. But apparently, according to that particular story, like she hadn't seen her previously. And had she fallen through time?
Stone tape theory. Yeah. Is it something to do with the location?
But coming back to kids.
Speculated on these things.
We have.
Countless times.
Coming back to kids, it's like it sets up this, you know, as a child, children seem to have these perceptions that kind of dissipate as people get older. But Laurie herself has then gone into this vocation, essentially, of being a remote viewer.
Mm.
So it suggests to me that there is some type of predisposition that you must have to having these abilities. But getting now into the temporal attractors, let's talk about this because Laurie brings this up. Let's describe what a temporal attractor is from her perspective.
Is this five?
Five.
Yeah, thanks.
Precognition is definitely coming through the channel of the subconscious mind. And we find that in remote viewing, one fascinating thing is called temporal attractors. So an attractor is something at the target side that gets your attention.
Yeah.
So if you love sparkly things and there's something sparkly at the target, you might just end up just...
Well, like Lynn Buchanan being drawn to the 9/11 event.
Exactly.
15 years or 16 years ahead of time because it served as an attractor.
Exactly. So if I were to give you a photograph in an envelope of the Pearl Harbor Monument as it is today, and you were to try to view it as a new viewer, you would probably view the bombing of Pearl Harbor. Because across the horizon of time, the bombing is much more, really gets your attention and draws you to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I mean, anything that causes entropy, where we have loud sounds, strong emotions, bright, you know, flashes, for example, are going to just attract the subconscious.
That's an interesting take, yeah.
So this explains to me, though, some of these stories we hear, these classic cases of time slips, right? Because like when you do, I always remember this actually with past life regressions, and people have past life regressions, and so many people be like, oh, I was Cleopatra, or, you know, they always end up being some really strong figure, right?
Not always, but yeah.
But often, I shouldn't say often, sorry, always, but often, like people seem to fall into this, like, The cases of past life regression where someone's like, yeah, I was just a workman working on this site and I fell, I find to be actually more legitimate than stories of people that, you know, kind of latch into famous historical figures. But my attitude on that has slightly changed, because transferring that to stories of like time slips, there's stories we've heard of, for example, of like women who were staying near Gettysburg, and they start hearing like gunfire and people yelling, and they rush outside to see what's going on. I think it's a reenactment, and they see it's so visceral and so real, and then they're so terrified that all of a sudden it just vanishes before them. It's like, why are they not seeing a field? Why are they not, like, they're having a time slip? Why are they not seeing like a beautiful sunny day? Because what's happened is that particular event, much like the stone tape effect, was so powerful that it has created itself as a temporal attractor. And that's why people have these experiences. Another example is the Battle of Hampton Heath, or Hopetoun Heath, sorry. This was a village just in the south of Shropshire. This was during the First English Civil War. This fell on Sunday, March the 19th of 1643. It was basically a battle between parliamentarian and royalist forces, and the battle ended at nightfall. But the outcome was difficult to say, because one side had captured guns, the other side had killed the leader. You know, it was a big deal, but nothing really happened in that particular location for centuries until 1974, the winter of 1974, you've got John Davis of Lichfield. He was a house painter at the time. He was just driving near Hopetoun Heath when he began to feel unwell. And this is something that people that have time slips describe. Jenny Randall's, you know, highlights the idea of the Oz factor, where people, all the sounds disappear. But there's also this sickness that also people experience, like a dizziness. And this one, he said he felt a tightness in his chest, a lightheadedness, almost like an anxiety, but also a heat that was in his body. It was in his left ear. He pulled over to the side of the road. And as he did, he said the night sky transformed into daylight. And on the road in front of him, it was no longer a road. He said it had been replaced by fields and tangled trees. And there were countless soldiers clearly wearing Civil War clothing. He said that no one, like, he was surrounded by them, but none of them seemed to be able to notice him or the car. He said he felt practically frozen on the spot. He couldn't have run if he wanted to, he said. Apparently, a few seconds later, the entire scene just vanished. He found himself back on the edge of a road with his car squished up against a large row of hedge. Now, what had happened? Had he just had like a panic attack, a little funny turn or something, and he'd run off the road and not realize? But it is, you know, strange that in that particular location, there was that significant battle, that huge battle, and he had that vision.
So are we suggesting that those kinds of events can help alter people's consciousness so they can view these things?
Pretty much. Yeah. It's like there's such an intensity to them that for whatever reason, people might be in a certain state. And again, they're on a roadway. So he's driving along a roadway. Maybe he's got that highway hypnosis that we described. It's a slightly altered state, even though it's not fully altered state, but you're in a slightly altered kind of ability to perceive things. And he just happened to stumble within the range of one of these temporal attractors, which allowed him to view it for a certain period of time before it vanished. So I thought that this, again, it's in a way, it's remote viewing. Like you are remote
it's all
viewing
the same ability, really.
Yeah, exactly. Now, one thing that came up though was this really great example with Lynn Buchanan, where like quantum physics and you know, these more advanced sciences that we have today are beginning to suggest to us that you know, even outside of the esoteric and the spiritual and the new age approach to what we talk about with time, science is starting to go, maybe there's something a little bit different about time. Like, and we've got scientific experiments that actually do demonstrate now that the future can alter the past. Like there was like readings, like it was, I think it was if a particle was perceived as a wave or a, as a wave or a particle could be altered by the way that you perceived it in the future. Like crazy abstract stuff like that. Well, remote viewing, this has been witnessed many, many, many times. And this is a great experience that happened to one of Lynn Buchanan's students. I'll let Laurie explain what happened.
So when I first was introduced to time loops, I was attending my very first day of basic class with Lynn Buchanan in San Antonio, Texas. And there were a number of people in the class. And Lynn said, okay, who wants to take a guess at what's in this envelope? And this man raised his hand and he said, I think there are flowers and trees and mountains and, you know, blue sky. And Lynn said, okay, open the envelope. And the guy opens the envelope and pulls out a picture which had been glued onto a piece of paper from a magazine. And it was a photograph of the inside of a factory. It was just machinery, right? Yeah, 100% yeah. Man-made. And so I don't remember what point Lynn was making, but he just went on and started teaching. Mm-hmm. And he was writing on the whiteboard. And then he turned around and he looked at this man, and the man was holding this piece of paper up to the light. And Lynn said, what are you doing? And the guy said, well, I'm trying to see what's glued on the other side of the picture, you know, that's on the glued side of the paper. And Lynn said, what's there? And the guy said, mountains and trees and flowers and blue sky, everything I said. Yeah. And Lynn said, well, you just ruined your session, buddy. And everybody went, well, wait a minute, what? How could he have ruined his session? His session happened 20 minutes ago. How did he ruin that? And Lynn said, well, let me give you an example. So on the whiteboard, he puts an X and he says, this is the moment where the guy made his guess and guessed the mountains and the trees and the flowers. And then if you move through time linearly, here's the moment in which he was shown the factory feedback. And then 20 minutes later, here's the moment where he cheated and he looked at it, you know, holding it up to the light. So what happened was he essentially gave himself two pieces of feedback because he looked at both sides of the paper. So that's two different feedbacks. Yeah. So his subconscious mind could effectively move forward in time to the one it liked the best and feed that information back. And it all happens in a split second. Mm-hmm. So he instantly guessed the flowers and the trees instead of the factory.
So the time loop is the idea that we can affect our own past.
That is right.
To see how it's like it induces a headache because
it's retrocausal.
It's retrocausal. So he wasn't necessarily what's really strange. It's not even like he was remote viewing the image. He was remote viewing his getting caught out at looking at the image later, but that went into the past and changed. It's like
if you when you meet your wife, for example, the first day you met your wife, you felt a connection.
Yeah.
And that's not because of any kind of love in the air or anything. It's pure retrocausality because you're responding from being married to them 20 years in the future.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. And I don't just get that with people like that you marry. Like I've heard stories of people just like good friends. Like people meet friends that somehow they kind of they click really well. They know things about each other without actually, you know, like they know personality traits. And people go, oh, well, this is like some type of, you know, past life together. But I'm like, well, maybe it's not. Maybe it is some type of weird retrocausal effect. Like you've hung out with someone for 20 years, like your example, and you know the personality traits. You know the way that people are, and you just feel, you know, naturally that they're someone that you want to hang around. I don't know. I think that kind of answers some things. But then it becomes even more crazy, right? So as I said at the start of the show, one of the issues, and I'll finish up on this particular one. One of the issues with remote viewing is, and you get this, I mentioned, you know, I'm not bashing past life regressions, but you get this as well with past life regressions, is that for people that don't go and see, you know, famous figures in the past, they suddenly become a pink dolphin on some water moon somewhere, right? Like, how can you verify? You can't verify that. There's no way you can verify that. There's no way that you can, you know, provide any validity to what you're seeing. And you go, well, how do we not know that this is something being generated by the mind? Because you're pushing so hard to get something out of it that that's what's being created. So this happens in remote viewing. It happens that you're given a set of coordinates, but you start coming up with the most bizarre of reactions and drawings and impressions and feelings. And you go, well, there's no way to validate that. Well, where you validate that is that you, again, use a blind target, but that blind target is applied to other people that are also remote viewers.
A group session.
Yeah. A group set, but where they're not connected to each other, so they can't, you know, talk amongst each other to be able to get their story straight. You look at it independently and you can see the similarities in the story. Well, Laurie has one of these experiences where she finds herself remote viewing Mars.
This is number six?
Number seven, please.
I've been tasked, for example, with the dark side of the moon 3 times over 20 years. And each time I saw the same thing, even though I was completely blind to the target. So I have a number of students who have reached, you know, very professional levels in their viewing. And I find that it's fascinating to me how they are able to look at a target and get amazing information, amazing, that just is quite extraordinary. One viewer viewed a target that I had viewed and Mel Riley had viewed, and we both had the same exact experience, Mel and I, when we viewed the target. I didn't know he was a viewer on it. He didn't know I was a viewer. Later, when we compared notes, it was like we had the exact same experience in viewing this target. And it was Mars. It was a target on Mars. And there were these obelisks on the target at the site. And I didn't feel that I was viewing in present time. I thought I was viewing maybe millions of years in the past. But these giant obelisks and the tips of the obelisks at the top were transmitting information, and they were also receiving information. So my monitor said, move to the source that is transmitting to the obelisks and describe. And suddenly I was encountering these beings that were not of this dimension. They were definitely other dimensional beings, and they were an amazing turquoise color, and they were kind of amorphous. Well, in comparing notes, Mel had the exact same experience. So I thought it would be interesting to task some very professional level viewers with the same target. And all of them had the same experience, encountering these blue beings. So 5 viewers experienced it. But one viewer in particular, who's extremely good, I asked her to go to the source of when the obelisks began, before they were built, and to tell me how they were constructed. And she said, they grew like crystals. You can grow them. And that was like not an answer I was expecting at all. So afterwards we joked and we were like, you can't make this stuff up. You know, it's just, we don't have any way to verify it. It's just interesting that 7 viewers in total, all of a professional level, all encountered the obelisks, all had the same experience with these blue amorphous looking beings.
Isn't that strange? Because one of the arguments that I was reading, because I've heard similar stories to this in remote viewing.
Joe McMonagle.
Right, yeah, is that, well, when perceiving this kind of stuff and seeing these alien beings, and, you know, you talk about things like Ingo Swan, you know, seeing naked men mining on the moon, that kind of stuff, the question, but you've got validation, right? You've got other people seeing it. Are they actually remote viewing a real location, a real event, or are they remote viewing someone's mind? Like, are they using telepathy, essentially? Where this kind of sits a little bit differently in this particular case is that she was validated with just one person first and then gave it to professional remote viewers afterwards to see what they would pick up on. And all of them picked up on the same thing. Now, look, I'm not saying that that's exactly what took place, but you can hear there she's looking through time and the remote viewing seems to have practical applications in other scenarios. So is it just possible that that was a valid remote viewing experience?
I think there might be some validity to it because these other teams of remote viewers have seen similar things on Mars, supposedly.
Many times.
We'll link to the Joe McMonagle one in the show notes. We've spoken about that plenty of times before. But you've got to factor in, like you were mentioning, the different dimensions of viewing. So in the distant past. But also you've got to think of other dimensions beyond our physical existence.
That's true. Yeah.
So if you send someone to Mars, are they seeing our physical dimension or is it some other dimension of existence? You know, is it some 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th density, whatever they like to call it?
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily, it's like when people talk about beings living on Venus and things like that. You know, some of the claims from people who have astral traveled, they're saying, well, I'm not viewing this experience as the real physical dense reality that we experience. It's yep. something else. It's in a different dimension.
Well, and to bring it to a close, you know, where I was thinking about my friend and what she experienced, because it's like, well, it could be an anomalous animal. It could be a cryptid of some kind. There was a story many years ago of a remote viewer in the UK who was attempting to remote view their local, what's it called? Cannock Chase, right? Cannock Chase. They were remote viewing. Guess what they encountered while they were remote viewing?
Pterodactyls.
No, not pterodactyls. A simple large black cat walked into their field of vision while they were remote viewing, realized it was being looked at, realized it could be seen.
Wait, they saw it in their remote viewing?
In their remote viewing. Okay, right. It walked into their field of vision in their remote viewing. The cat realized it could be seen and instantaneously it disappeared in a puff of mist. So I'm like... These remote viewing, right? You're not.
It's just another supernormal ability. It's just with more protocols.
Correct. Yeah. You're basically what it is. It's giving you an ability. So I think, but for these sorts of experiences, again, I don't think this answers all of them, but maybe some people are spontaneously remote viewing and that's what they're seeing. They're seeing these things. They're hearing these things. There's like a clairaudience to it. There's this precognition about it. It's not necessarily what we think it is. It's some type of other ability, which I think remote viewing may explain to some degree. But look, I'll link to all of this in the show notes at mysteriousuniverse.org so you can check it out for yourself. Don't forget that if you're having issues, if you're a Plus member with your password reset or you need support, email support at mysteriousuniverse.org and we'll get back to you. But Tuesday, it should be fixed.
Yeah, just email us directly if you have any issues. And speaking of Plus, the signups and everything are still obviously working fine. Mysteriousuniverse.org/Plus. Sign up today and get access to the big extensions we do every single Friday. And of course, Plus members get an exclusive show every single Tuesday as well. If you sign up for the Emmy Max tier, you get access to our massive back catalogue going back nearly 20 years now. And a lot more coming up on this show. I'm going to be talking about, well, it starts off with a tragedy, actually. It's this story from Scotland back in 2021 with the headline, "Killer son left his father with 110 stab wounds and filmed him dying on Twitter."
Oh.
Christopher Gray was found holding the knife over his dead father after stabbing him. What's interesting about this case, other than it being a horrific murder, is that this guy had filmed this event, posted it on Twitter, but also sent it to an email list. And that email list was a big, long list of UFO researchers.
Why would you do that?
He sent it to Louis Elizondo. He sent it to Jacques Vallée. He sent it to all these guys, the big names in ufology. And in this email, he talked about destroying Satan. But he
clearly schizophrenic.
In this email, he said he was in contact with the lady. So we're going to be talking about, again, the dark connection with the lady. What is her true nature? That's coming up after the break on Plus. Again, head to mysteriousuniverse.org/plus. Sign up today. Help support your favorite show. That's a wrap for this free edition of MU. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. If you're on Plus, stick around for the great stuff after the break. For everyone else, we'll catch you next week. Welcome back to your Plus extension. Great to have you with us.